Oh, hello everybody and welcome to this episode of Turning Towards Life. This is Lizzie and Justin and we are live a little bit later than usual. It's some minutes past three on a Sunday in January, I think we are. And we are really happy to be here one more time and hopefully the one more time will continue for as long as we can imagine. It's grown into such a gorgeous practice for us to be here and thank you for changing the time to be with us if you're here with us live. And obviously, if you're listening at another time, that's entirely irrelevant to you. But I want to appreciate the people who've shifted their schedules to be with us because I know there's a couple. And also for some people, the time works better than normal. So anyway, welcome to you if you are here unusually because the time has shifted. We're really, really glad to be here. We're currently in the middle of our professional coaching program, the second session of four sessions. So Justin and I are switching out of there while our students are engaging in coaching each other for the first time. So it's a lovely day actually for us to see all of the people in the program beginning this work of integral coaching with each other. And in the midst of that, we're doing this Turning Towards Life. So it feels very lovely to be attending to this part of our community whilst also another part is doing what it's doing while we're sitting here. It's very lovely. So hello to everybody, and Justin is such a lovely source. I'm so excited to talk about it with you.
Thank you for all of that, Lizzie. We've just come into this with some hilarity. Lizzie and I have found ourselves telling jokes, very, very poor quality jokes to one another on the way in. So I can feel the and coming into this conversation with a huge amount of sort of playful joyfulness, Lizzie, and it is really good to be here. I'm really pleased to be in this conversation and I'm feeling very grateful all of you who are listening in all the different forms that you get to us in the podcast or on turningtowards.life or you join us on Facebook Live or you watch later. And I want to, as we often do, just make an invitation that if you do listen on the podcast and you'd like to sort of hang out more closely, be in conversation with us and with the community that's formed around this. And if you do use Facebook, just search for the Turning Towards Life group. It's a private members group and you have to ask to join and we will gladly welcome you in. And it's a place where you can be involved in the sort of the spreading conversation that happens from each of these conversations. And of course, we know that these conversations become conversations in lots of people's lives anyway, which is the very meaningful to me to know that that's true. So as always, we've brought a source. I've been sitting on this one for a while and really looking forward to bringing it. And this is from a writer who we have drawn on a couple of times before in our 170 something weeks of doing this, Richard Rohr. His writing is very easy to find if you like it because he has a daily blog and he's written lots of books. So this one is about boundaries and enabling constraints. You can find it, as always. We put it with the podcast. It's on the Facebook group and it will be with, if you end up watching this on a video, it will be there as well and on our website. I'll read it first. Law, tradition and boundaries, what I call order, seem to be necessary both to reveal and to limit our basic egocentricity. Such containers make at least some community, family and marriage possible. Boundaries seem to be the only way that human beings can find a place to stand, a place to begin, a place from which to move out. Even those who think they don't have any boundaries usually do. We discover them when we trespass against them. The human soul flourishes on solid ground, especially in the first years of life. Human beings seem to need to fight and engage with something before they can take it seriously and before they can discover what they really need or want. The people who never fight religion, guilt, parents, injustice, friends, marriage partners, and laws usually don't respect their own power, importance, and freedom. They remain content with the external values of the first lawful container instead of working to discover their own. I'm trying to hold us inside a very creative tension because both law and freedom are necessary for spiritual growth. The psyche cannot live with everything changing every day. Everything a matter of opinion, everything relative. There must be a sound container holding us long enough so we can move beyond survival mode. There has to be solid ground, trust and shared security, or we cannot move outward.
Human beings seem to need to fight and engage with something before they can take it seriously. And before they can discover what they really need or want. The people who never fight religion, guilt, parents, injustice, friends, marriage partners, and laws usually don't respect their own power, importance, and freedom. They remain content with the external values of the first lawful container instead of working to discover their own. I'm trying to hold us inside a very creative tension because both law and freedom are necessary for spiritual growth. The psyche cannot live with everything changing every day. Everything a matter of opinion, everything relative. There must be a sound container holding us long enough so we can move beyond survival mode. There has to be solid ground, trust, and shared security, or we cannot move outward.
Thank you, Lizzie. I was feeling as you were reading how I was feeling about my own formative years of my life and how maybe it's the case that we each, well, clearly it's the case that we have different experience of this in our lives as humans, of this dynamic between being held and fighting for our freedom.
Mm.
And in my, what I know about myself, and it really touched me, Lizzie, when you read the middle paragraph, is I grew up in a family with lots of solid ground. Lots of clarity, lots of boundaries appropriately held, not overdone, any of those, like really held sort of right in that place of, but it took me a really, really long time to learn to fight. So that's the way I go. My personality structures that got built through my early experiences and the way I took them up was to do exactly what Richard Rohr says, which is to stay within the external values of the first lawful container.
Mm.
And I have a couple of very strong memories of it. One was being bullied at school. And I might have talked about this before on Turning Towards Life, actually, and not fighting back, being punched. And a teacher coming in and saying to me, no, 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 no. When someone's hitting you, you're meant to defend yourself. Like you're meant to fight that, which was really new to me. But the other thing that I'm remembering that's touching me very deeply is the person who first taught me to say no, who interestingly was someone who really wanted me to say no so I could say yes to all the things that he wanted me to do. So it was it kind of backfired when I learned to say no to him as well.
Mm-hmm.
But learning to push back against a boundary for me and for some of us who go that way is the first time that we get to step into a life that we can call our own, that's not just a life of duty and responsibility.
Mm.
And I've really had to fight for it, actually. The fight has been, for many years, was with my own feeling most comfortable with staying on the inside and my own shame and fear about what would happen if I took up what Richard Rohr is inviting us to in the second part, which is the fight for our freedom. Mm. But I can also see, Lizzie, that fight only really becomes possible once we've found a way to be constrained, that mm-hmm. the attempt to break for freedom, for any kind of freedom that we can have without first feeling held, really leaves us in all kinds of trouble. But most importantly, actually, as I'm speaking about this, what's coming to me is, yes, this is about our formative years, but actually this is really a dynamic that we live in all the time. The holding together, constraints that enable us, and breaking free of constraints. We actually need both sides of it all the way through our lives, it seems to me.
Oh my gosh, so listening to you, there's so many things coming up for me. I'm not sure I know where to begin, because you saying all of that has just had me realize that really, I think I probably had the opposite of you, which was there weren't any boundaries. So it was like a very kind of fluid kind of environment where breakfast wasn't a routine or lunch wasn't a routine. You know, there was no, none of the ordinary punctuation things I'm seeing. And so there was nothing to fight anyway, because there was no, there was no something there to bash up against in a way. I mean, ultimately there was enough boundaries for me to be, okay, but there wasn't any point in fighting, because there was already a bigger fight going on where, you know, the younger ones didn't really, you know, we were more concerned about that going on than having our own fight, if you know what I mean. So I'm noticing just that last thing you said was that these things are probably a dynamic that we're all dancing between in probably different areas of our lives and different stages of our lives all the time. And what I'm really moved by is this, people who never fight usually don't respect their own power, importance and freedom. And I realize for me, because there was never a fight to be had, I think the early part of my life just turned into being nice, which is one version of just abiding by the laws, which interestingly kind of similar to yours in a way, you know, just keep everything just the way that it is kind of feeling. So I was in some way kind of hypnotized by the no boundariness and just thought, oh, I'll just smooth my way through, because there wasn't really anything to bash up against. So I didn't become anything to bash up against. And of course, things have really changed in that way. But I was just yesterday actually talking to my sister about this word nice. And weirdly, I remember getting a report at school that said Lizzie needs to stop using the word nice to describe everything. And so it kind of in some way pervaded me so deeply that I couldn't even find any distinguishing vocabulary, actually, because I think my life was oriented towards being nice. And so fighting when you're nice is really like they don't go together. And so I'm realizing that in the journey of becoming someone who understands that I have power, importance, and freedom is also giving birth. I think it's an ongoing process, is also giving birth to me having preferences, for example, which is a version of boundaries. Me being able to state and declare and say no, like you're saying, like no as a declaration of no, I'm not willing to do that, or yes, I'm willing to do that, rather than, well, what's the path of least resistance and what will upset the least a number of people? So I'm really appreciating Richard Rohr's language around this and how clarifying it is for me that there's an illusion for me that I don't want any boundaries at all, because there's something familiar in that to me, something safe from originalness for me. But every time boundaries are put in place for me, I find a new kind of power. And it's so kind of contra to the narrative that I've held of, well, I just need my options to be open, need to do whatever I want to do. That's my definition of freedom. And then as soon as the boundary comes, it's like the hose, the water can get from the tap to the flower bed, because there's something holding the power, something holding, intensifying, directing, channeling my life force, which previously would have been seen as a constraint that I didn't want. And now I really understand in my body what an enabling constraint is. So something that holds me, that makes something possible that isn't possible unless I'm held in a particular routine, in a particular structure, in a particular form. And it's a really empowering something that this is. And of course, it exists on all the different scales. But I'm so appreciating this orientation around my own power, my own importance, and my own freedom, and how that links with these very important enabling boundaries that are weirdly, paradoxically, what freedom's made of.
It's been occurring to me whilst you've been speaking, Lizzie, that one kind of freedom you might call freedom from, and another kind of freedom you might call freedom to.
Mm.
You know, freedom from is like busting the boundaries, and it has it's necessary in some ways, but freedom from on its own leaves us in this world that, well, actually we can see around us, because I think there's a big freedom from thing going on in our wider culture at the moment, because it leads to relativism. Well, I can say anything I want to say just because I want to say it, and I can claim anything is true just because I want to claim it, and I won't allow myself to be bounded by anything. And it's born of, I think one thing it's born of is a very poisonous story, which is it's sort of the consumerist story of really you can have anything you want when you want it. Oh, and one of the poisons of that is, oh, but if you don't find that that's possible, there must be something wrong with you, or you must not be trying hard enough.
Mm.
But actually, it's much more truthful to see that the world is made of constraint all the time. I mean, actually, that is the grounding reality. My body is the body I have. My body can do some things and not others. My body is finite. I can't be in two places at one time. I used to think I could in some strange way. I can't do 50 things at once. I can actually really only do one thing. Once can be. So we live in a world that has enormous freedom, but is actually built of genuine constraints. And thank goodness for those constraints, because without the constraints of a body, we'd be a splurge of mess on the floor that wasn't alive. You know, we are brought into life by the constraints of having a physical, biological body. So I was thinking whilst you were talking that, in a way, what you were talking about making, I heard you talking about making your own constraints, and that just like the world, the constraints of the world are actually what enable us to live and breathe and move and relate. There's so much to be said for intentionally practicing making enabling constraints for us that will allow our life to flow through, just like you said, like a hose contains the water so that the force of the water can come out where it's needed, not just spilling on, you know, spilling out of the tap. It really is actually like that. And I was feeling the pain in learning this for me. I have such strong memories of being in my early 20s and having made commitments. I was doing youth work and I had to travel quite a long way to do youth work. And I would always leave terribly late. And the reason I would leave terribly late is because I was trying to take care of 50 things for 50 people before I could leave.
Mm.
And when I got there, I would arrive late and I could not live with the shame of being someone who had arrived late, and I would make stuff up.
Mm.
I had a puncture on the way. I mean, really, like whatever.
Mm.
And that's really no way to live, actually. I mean, that was a life of continually being shown that my imagined capacity was way, way beyond the actual constraints of the world, and how dignifying it is to learn to say, I am committing to this, and I am then going to constrain myself because of the commitment that I've declared. I'm going to voluntarily box myself into something. And I suppose that's the part that Richard Rohr writes about when he says about the importance of our working to discover our own container.
Mm-hmm.
That this is so absolutely necessary, and it continues to be necessary to be building good containers for ourselves that we are willing to stand inside, because they do this focusing act of having our life force come through into the things that we care about and the things that matter to us.
Yeah, it's really... I really appreciate this piece of, you know, talking about how we've learned about these constraints. And I think it's also a really challenging process in a way to become someone who's able to have constraints, because certainly in a narrative like mine, to become someone who disappoints others because I did that is a thing. You know, so there are consequences to boundaries being put in place, and often those consequences have something to do with relationships, because we're in systems of people all the time, whether it's a family or a workplace or the community or whatever. And so to say what our container is and not just live by the container that's given to us, like the set of boundaries that's given to us in a company or the set of boundaries that's given to us in our family, to find our own container instead of just the lawful one, the original lawful one, as Richard Rohr says. There's a relational aspect in here that's really challenging, which is that I have to become somebody that you're not used to me being. And of course, you probably want me to stay just the way that I am, because that suits you. And so then we have to navigate. So this part where he talks about mutual ground trust and security, shared security, is so important. So working on the inside of our relationships and finding out how to be together in that ground that allows each other to set boundaries feels like the kind of, the foundational possibility for this to happen. You know, whether it's with our children, with our partners, with our friends, colleagues, how do we create that mutual ground of trust so that when you say to me, actually, Lizzie, I don't want to do that, I can't do that because of this, this and this, I don't try and just re-enroll you back into the busyness and say, oh, come on, Justin, you'll be all right. Come on. You have to do that because of this, this and this. I can be me and you can be you, and we can agree together that actually for the sake of your well-being or what you want in your life, what you want to do and what you're declaring, how do I make it so that that's okay for me to have that as a possibility, rather than kind of keep dragging you back into the thing that you're trying to make a container around. So I think it's a really big relational piece to be in the kind of relating that lets you be you and me be me, and for us not to be so squished up together that I can't tolerate your being different than I need you to be in my current way of seeing and being with you. And I feel really grateful that Richard Rohr's pointing to this, because this sharedness, I don't know, it seems to be quite unusual that people can really allow each other to have the thing that they want to have happen without having an opinion on it and without trying to have their go at making it the way they think it should be.
Yeah. In fact, it's that very learning that kind of mutual safety that eluded me and evaded me for so long, because see if I can grasp this. For so long, it felt to me like me having boundaries would have me not belong. If I said to you, Lizzie, I'm not going to come to your party. No, I can't meet you at that time. There's usually no's for me that were the thing. Then somehow I'm not going to belong with you, because previously I've said yes and previously I've made myself available. Yes. And what allows me to have those, to make boundaries that can support my life, is being in relationship with others who are willing to relax their boundaries with me so that I can have my own boundaries.
Yeah.
So it's a sort of, there's a double move in relationship that really helps us to be able to make, which is to give the people that we care about enormous freedom to have boundaries themselves. So that's a freedom too, which also affords us the possibility of making boundaries that can have our life be focused in the way that we want. And that's why there's and that the not having boundaries for ourselves and not allowing other people to set their own boundaries becomes a prison in and of itself. Like it's there's so much freedom in knowing, Lizzie, that I can settle into the ground of trust between us, and you can actually be the way that you, whatever way is called for.
Mm.
And I'm not going to leave all that I can be, whichever way it is called for, and you're going to stay.
Mm.
And beyond that, I suppose what I've been putting my attention on is we actually can't guarantee that anybody will stay ever, because things happen. We're not in charge of that. So can we find a deeper kind of ground that we can stand on, a kind of belonging to life itself that allows us to set necessary boundaries and containers for ourselves,
mm-hmm.
for those times when we don't have any influence of what happens. And until we can do that, our lack of containing is another kind of giant constraint.
Yeah, it's got me thinking about what is that made of? What practices support that? You know, being in relationship in a way that's on a deeper level than I want you to be a certain way and you want me to be a certain way. So what's that made of when we allow each other to be just the way that we are? And we're spacious enough and connected enough that you're you and I'm me, and something is really mutually satisfyingly important between us, but it's not made of you adhering to my preferences and meeting all my needs. It's at a different, it's a different order of relationship. And that feels really hopeful to me that, and I know that's possible. You know, I really know that's possible. There are certain relationships in my life that are really made of that. And then there are others that are different than that. And I know how I show up in the different ones. You know, I know how much easier it is for me to say what I need in the ones where there's that depth of mutual safety. Whereas the ones that I feel less like I'm just allowed to be who I am, I'm dancing the dance, you know, and doing what I think is necessary according to my definition of what that person thinks. So I'm feeling this in the way that how can I be the initiator of the deepening of relationship, that I can do my part in facilitating letting people be just the way that they are, and letting that trust build from that, allowing that letting go of my own preferences about how people should be, so that they feel safe enough just to be the way that they are. And also, how can I be in things where, when I don't dance the dance, how can I be in relationship with myself in a deeper way that I don't immediately get pulled back into dancing the dance when I stop dancing? You know, how do I hold my own and fight a fight and discover my own power, importance and freedom by not doing the thing that I'm kind of scripted to do? Like, what does that take, and what kind of center do I need to have, and what kind of community of support do I need to have? What kind of practices, inquiries, what kind of things might I read, listen to meet me where I am, so that I don't feel so like I'm kind of clinging on to the things on the outside that are safe? But how can I build some internal safety, and safety that's meets me in my calling, and that meets me in my deepest longings, so that I have some serious ground to stand on whilst the old ground gets shaky?
We're right up near the time when we have to end, and I have one sort of inkling of a response to what you just said, Lizzie, which is when we can learn to be in contact with that of ourselves that is prior to all of our personality, preferences and habits. You use the word center, the center of us that's not caught up in being pleased by anyone or pleasing anyone. And we can be in relationship with that in other people. that's when we start to get on the side of life itself rather than on the side of, I liked that, I didn't like that, you met my preference right now. And it's, we can wonder about what kind of practices for ourselves help us get in contact with that. But I was also really taken by this question about what kind of communities we might look for, where we can get met for that of us, not for all of our ways that we've been trying to teach everybody all the time what we like and how we are and how to expect us to be. And yeah, maybe that's one of the things that we humans end up really needing, is places where we can get out of the dance of trying to make ourselves and one another any particular way.
Mm.
It's part of the path.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for being in this conversation with me today.
Mm, thank you.
Lizzie. Thank you, everyone who's with us. It means so much that you're in this conversation with us. And I want to say before we end, please tell people who you think would benefit being in this conversation. Please invite them to join us. Subscribe to the podcast or check out the website or come and join our Facebook group, because it's such a gift to be in an ever expanding conversation of people who want to be in these questions.
Mm.
We'll be back also at an unusual time next weekend, because we're teaching again next weekend. We'll announce on our Facebook group. It'll probably be in the afternoon, UK time. And we'll see you then.
Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye, everyone.